back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am still your host, L. Ariel. And here we are sliding into December, the end of 2017. But don't worry, before the year is up, we're going to have some more great interviews and episodes, including this one. So just to recap, we are on musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We're on all the streaming platforms, Google Play, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and all that good stuff. Last week, I had the pleasure of interviewing Rich Rankin, who is a very popular mixing and recording engineer. He's worked with a lot of people. He's an industry vet. He's also been a luthier. He's a product manager for Gibson, and he was a product manager for Line 6. And he's also a very good bass player. He played in a lot of bands, a lot of places around LA and beyond. And he's just one of those people that knows a lot of people in the industry, had some really great stories, and just emphasized the importance of building those relationships, not burning bridges, and that everything comes full circle. It's pretty cool. It's like you set out to go in one direction and you end up somewhere else that you didn't even expect, but it's just as wonderful. And I think, you know, your journey is going to be rife with all different experiences in the industry. Setting out to do one thing, I think you'll find is going to be very limiting. There's so much more out there, so much more opportunity if you just keep an open mind and don't burn any bridges. Don't piss anybody off. I think that's what Rich said. Don't piss anyone off because you just never know. Okay, enough babbling. So this week's guest is Cordell Miles. He's the owner of Music Masters Worldwide, a full-service music store which features all genres, including rock, progressive, classic, jazz, blues, imports, and more, in a variety of formats, vinyl, CDs, DVDs, and even 8-tracks and cassette tapes. He's just got a hell of a story. I really like talking with him. He was born in Kentucky, then he moved out to California and kind of immersed himself in the music scene out there in SoCal. He's a former rap MC and DJ, and he just has a really interesting journey about his desire to continue in music, to immerse himself in music, even though he wasn't sure which direction it was going to take. And he has a really good take, too, about the resurgence of vinyl and what it means to own a brick-and-mortar record store in this day and age when it seems like digital and streaming has kind of stomped out anything remotely physical product. So again, just a great interview. And he allowed me to pick a song from a few that he chose. And so I thought the most apropos was Going Back to Cali by the ultimate LL Cool J. Here it is.
Going back to Cali, Cali. Cali, I'm going back to Cali. I don't think so. I'm going back to Cali, Cali, Cali. I'm going back to Cali. I don't think so. Going back to Cali, styling, profiling, dialing, and smiling while in the sun. The top is down on the black Corvette, and his fly cause is sitting on the beat. Steering wheel, plushed out, gold leaf, phantom top.
Hey, Cordell, thank you for joining me on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? It's such a pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So
good. All right. Well, I always like to kind of pick my guests' brains about their childhood in terms of music. Like, you know, what was playing in their household when they were growing up? What were their parents into? Were their parents musicians? Like, what's the first exposure, that kind of thing? So maybe you can talk about that.
Of course. I actually had a pretty interesting childhood when it came to music. I was the first grandchild on my dad's side of the family. So I was spoiled by many, you know, great aunts and uncles. Mm-hmm. Their musical influence was kind of all across the board. Mm-hmm. I got introduced to, you know, music at a very early age, you know, and they listened to a lot of just traditional Motown, you know, and soul, R&B, funk. So that was, you know, sort of what I grew up on, you know, at a very early age. My dad had always been heavily into music. He, you know, had an 8-track in his car, and he, you know, his electronics were always sort of fine-tuned as far as what turntables he had, what receivers you know, he had, and on up until, you know, CDs and things like that. So he was heavy into jazz, and I remember, you know, listening to a lot of Herbie Hancock, Isley Brothers, most definitely, a lot of Weather Report. So he turned me on to a different variety of jazz.
Mm-hmm.
That I kind of gravitated on to even up, you know, to today. My grandmother, she was really big into big band music. And so I remember sitting, you know, with her watching the Lawrence Welk TV show, if anyone remembers that show. I hung on as long as the bubbles. And once
yeah,
the bubbles,
me too.
You know,
me too. That's when I had to go to bed.
I kind of just left. But I do remember, you know, enjoying some of the big band and, you know, her and my grandfather get going to the big band dances. And that was our opportunity to get dressed up and kind of go out. So we moved to California when I was about 7 years old. And that's when, you know, sort of my music appreciation really expanded because up until then I listened to I would say a very narrow genre. Once I got to California, then I got introduced to a lot of 70s rock, you know, what you would call classic rock today. So a lot of Yes, a lot of Fleetwood Mac, and then that kind of you know got me into listening to, you know, people like Jimi Hendrix, you know, a lot of the Genesis. And I didn't know, you know, I was never exposed to any of that, you know, when I was younger, because being from Louisville, Kentucky, you either listen to, you know, soul, R&B, or country. And I didn't necessarily, you know, get an appreciation for country music until later on. And then, you know, we moved to Huntington Beach, California. So there was a lot of different variations of rock. So I got introduced to a lot of punk bands, you know, that were, playing. And it just broadened my whole perspective as far as what I appreciated as far as, you know, music is concerned. So, it was funny to see my collection. I had, you know, early stages of hip hop. I had, you know, some metal. I had, you know, definitely all kind of different genres of classic rock. And then, you know, I'd sneak in there and grab, you know, something from, you know, my dad's jazz collection, you know, some George Benson or something like that, you know. So I was just kind of all across the board.
Very cool. And then what about instruments? Did you pick up an instrument, start playing? Did you take lessons?
I tried. I want to say when it came to playing instruments, I was just impatient, and I just didn't have the parental guidance or anybody, you know, around me to keep me disciplined, you know, at a young age to continue to play until I got to a point to where it actually sounded decent. I did take, you know, some keyboarding classes just so that I could get introduced in, you know, how to read music and things like that. I tried to pick up a guitar, and that was tragic. I think I just did that because guitar players were cool, and I was like, if I could just play guitar, then I could get so many dates. And
right, you're not alone in that pursuit. I've heard that a lot.
So by the time, you know, I actually really got into the music side of it, I found more enjoyment in sort of playing music. So all the people that I grew up with and things like that, you know, they were DJs. So, you know, we were out at clubs spinning records. I was in and out of a few, you know, early, you know, rap groups in the mid-80s and early 90s. So I much more enjoyed kind of holding a microphone and speaking to people than I did playing an instrument. But I couldn't sing and hold a tune. You know, so I just had to basically put poetry to music, and that's where I found, you know, most of my enjoyment is to, you know, kind of be more around the hip hop scene. And so that was probably my extent. I did attend when I went to college. I took a music engineering class. But I thought, you know, maybe if I could be, you know, behind the board and work it from that perspective, then I would find enjoyment there. And I did. I definitely like, you know, the perfection that comes with taking something that, you know, is raw and putting it together to, you know, to make something that is you know, that's beautiful. So I did that for a while, and that kind of helped me with some of the people that I work with, because, you know, I could do, you know, simple stages of engineering and things like that. So that was something that I did continue to pursue, but not, you know, not as a professional career or anything, because, again, you know, I mean, engineers, they didn't get dates, you know, so I was like, man, I couldn't sit here. I couldn't do this with you guys. I like it. It's fun. It's something that I can pick up on quite easily, but being in California and, you know, being around the club scene that me and my DJ friends were a part of, you know, being out there in the spotlight was something that, you know, at 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, you know, you gravitate to that more than would be, you know, kind of sitting in a dark studio somewhere, you know, with trying to figure out, you know, how you make a sandwich or something, or.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, so walk me through that a little bit. So you went to college, you stayed in California. We went to college in California.
Yeah. Yeah. So I when I moved from Louisville at seven, I stayed there in California until I was, you know, in my mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there, you know, most of, you know, my sort of adolescent years on into, you know, sort of my, you know, early, you know, adult years. And so I tell people all the time, you know, I mean, I'll go back home to Louisville and I can't tell you how to get to the grocery store, but I could tell you how to get, you know, all up and down the coast. So that you want me to do that,
right.
I can give you directions, you know, from the border down there, Tijuana, you know, up until, you know, you get, you know, up north. So
nice.
But so that.
It's like implanted in your brain forever.
Absolutely. Yeah. It really is something that I didn't appreciate it, you know, as much, because, you know, I had, you know, grown up in sort of a, you know, much smaller metropolitan environment, you know, even though Louisville is, you know, a bigger city, it just, you know, it's nowhere near, you know, sort of the way LA is in Southern California. So I missed home a lot, you know, when I was young. But, you know, as I grew up and got to know the area, then it didn't seem as big. So.
Yeah, of course. So you're in college and you're doing kind of the engineering thing, but your focus is mainly on the DJ thing. Yeah. You're like going out and you're playing at clubs and stuff like that. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, did you start to see kind of a path for yourself? Like, this was like, this is what I want to do. I want to DJ at clubs, or what did it look like?
Absolutely. We actually started out, you know, as teenagers. So we were literally 16, 17 years old in high school. And I met a few guys that were in the industry, you know, not big names, but, you know, they've done, you know, some smaller scale production and things like that. And in the Orange County area, you know, there wasn't a lot of, you know, focus on those that, you know, that DJed or did, you know, did hip hop. And it was still at the on stages of, you know, when, you know, Dr. Dre and NWA was kind of coming about, you know, in the LA area.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were trying to, you know, kind of do our thing there, you know, in the Orange County area, just like, you know, Dr. Dre and that group was doing their thing, you know, in the LA area. We're, you know, on a much smaller scale, but, you know, I mean, there were a few clubs, you know, that we did on a regular basis. I actually did, you know, find, you know, that to be a path, you know, for my career. I remember, you know, kind of us, you know, collectively going as a group, you know, we would, you know, drive up, you know, to Compton, or we would go to Long Beach, or, you know, we would, you know, go hang out, you know, at different places in Hollywood, you know, to shop for records, or, you know, just try to, you know, be seen, or, you know, or just be, you know, be a part of that, you know, that growing hip hop community. And as I, you know, kind of made, you know, little demo tapes and, you know, and was excited for the fact that some of my friends around the neighborhood and stuff like that, you know, would play my demo tapes. And as, you know, some of my other DJ friends actually, you know, gained, you know, pretty good credibility around, you know, Southern California area. It seemed like a good path, you know, kind of moving forward. The thing that I found to be the most difficult is that when I saw some of my other friends start to move forward, get record deals. I had, you know, a couple friends of mine that actually were signed to the Priority Records kind of at the same time that EVE and NWA were, you know, that they were kind of, you know, building up, you know, their empire. And it was disheartening, you know, to see that, that, you know, that they were not necessarily even looking at this as their job now, right? And you mm-hmm. know, that they weren't, you know, being as financially secure as I thought that they would be. Mm-hmm. You know, I ended up, you know, sort of having, you know, a few different jobs here and there that I worked. And it was interesting that, you know, here's these guys that I looked up to that were moving forward in their music career. They, you know, I would be out of the clubs and I would have to buy them drinks or, you know, pay for them, you know, to have dinner and things like that. So that kind of rubbed me the wrong way when it came to just what that career path looked like within the industry.
Mm-hmm. And so it was sort of like the fantasy versus reality, because the fantasy was like, you know, that you're like a millionaire and that this is it. And you've like kind of like hitting the lottery or something. And then you're seeing the reality of it. Like maybe they get an advance or something, or it's like a paltry amount. And then they're still struggling. Is that what you kind of observed?
Absolutely. And so that kind of took me down the path to say, okay, what is the actual career path and what does that look like? So, you know, I was still, you know, in college at that time, you know, and going through engineering class. And I thought, you know, maybe this, because I mean, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, if you're an engineer, then, you know, you that is, you know, a steady job.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't necessarily look at that at the time because, you know, I just had, you know, starstruck eyes and kind of thinking about what it would look like to go on tour and what it would be like, you know, to be in the booth, you know, doing the recording and, you know, being creative and things like that, not necessarily looking at, you know, what was the most, you know, long-term steady path of, you know, having a career. I did some really small A&R work mm-hmm. for some startup labels, and I thought, you know, that was pretty fun because, you know, artist development, you know, was something that was really interesting to me. I had, you know, a few ideas that I got some groups together. But again, you know, I mean, that is not necessarily a career path, I would say, you know, especially at that time. I mean, you know, was it something that you look at and you just be an A&R rep for the rest of your life, right? You just don't get mm-hmm. in there. But I, along, you know, with what I was doing in college, I took some business classes and wanted to understand the business side of the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
And once I did that and had that aspect of the way things work, open my eyes to, you know, something that I didn't necessarily feel comfortable with as far as a career path. That turned me off, you know, for a little while, to be honest with you, as far as just being an artist or, you know, being, you know, any aspect of that. You know, I didn't want to have to go and just figure out a way to hustle for my money all the time, right?
That
wasn't, you know, an appealing aspect for me.
It's a conundrum. It's like, what do you do? Because I relate so much, because it's like, you know, you want to be an artist, you want to have the freedom and the space to create, but at the same time, you got to pay bills. You can't sleep on people's couches forever. So how do you find that balance? And some people go work at Starbucks and some people take an A&R job. Some people quit altogether and go to med school. Like, it's sort of one of those, you know, how do you support yourself as an artist? Do you support yourself through the industry, or does that burn you out too much to the industry? You know what I mean? So it's definitely, I think, a really common, you know, issue facing DIY indie musicians.
Absolutely. I mean, I think today I see musicians being a lot smarter.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, the industry is also, their expectations have increased. So, you know, when I started out, you could basically have a demo tape, you know, that had, you know, half dozen songs and get an advance, and you know, depending upon, you know, how they looked at your talent or what you're capable of doing, you would, you know, could be locked in, you know, for a record deal.
Right.
But now, I mean, it's to the point to where, you know, now that the artists are smarter, the industry smarter. And, you know, you have to come, you know, prepared, you know, with at least, you know, 3-4 albums and, you know, have a production studio that, you know, that you could, you know, go in and lay down, you know, your tracks and do the things that you need to do to present these in a professional manner. So, I mean, it's really changed.
Yeah.
And that aspect of it, you know, is interesting to me because I didn't necessarily see that growth back when, you know, I was kind of looking at the business side, you know, of the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also the with social media nowadays too, it's like labels want you to do all the footwork. They want, you know, do you have 1 million followers or subscribers on YouTube? You know what I mean? It's like, what are you bringing to the table versus you're some unknown with a demo tape and, you know, oh, don't worry, we'll put together a package for you and this is how you're going to dress and this is how you're going to look and this is how we're pitching you. So it is kind of a like double-edged sword, isn't it? It's like you'll get the freedom because if you've got this huge fan base, you can be whoever the hell you want, express yourself however you want. But if you don't, you know, how much control do you have to cede to a record label or, you know, their marketing arm or whatever? So what happened after you were just kind of like, all right, the business aspect is turning me off? Like, what did you kind of decide to go from there?
From there, I had a life-changing event, and I had my son when I was like 26 years old.
Aww.
And that pretty much changed things for me because I was like, okay, now, you know, I can't, you know, go around and, you know, just be at video shoots and hang out, you know, in the studio for, you know, whenever I felt like I was done. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, some responsibilities that I need to take care of. And it was a slow kind of migration because I still had, you know, one foot in the door and one foot, you know, kind of in the studio and still connecting and building, you know, my relationships and things like that. But I just didn't necessarily do the same amount of networking and hanging out. And eventually I just had my regular job that looked like it was moving forward. You know, I mean, I took some of my business skills that, you know, that I learned through college and put those to use at my day job. Mm-hmm. And got some promotions, made some more money. And the next thing you know, I did more at my day job than I was doing as, you know, being an artist or, you know, spinning records or anything like that. So that just kind of stumbled upon being a career path for me.
Mm-hmm. But that's obviously not the end of the story.
Oh, no.
Right? That's not the end of the call. Okay, thanks, Cordell. See you later.
Yes.
Bye. So how did you pivot back? What happened?
I pivoted back in a way that is really obscure because, I mean, I had got myself to a point to where I moved out of California. Mm-hmm. I was in Minnesota for about 5 years. And
Minneapolis or just Minnesota?
Minneapolis. So I was working downtown.
So you were in Prince, the land of Prince. So that's very cool.
Absolutely. I had an opportunity to stand out at the Paisley Park Rave a couple of times.
Oh my God, you're so lucky. That's so cool. I'm like an insane fan. I'm planning on doing like a pilgrimage to Paisley Park next year. That's so cool.
You know, it's different now, you know, that he's passed away. But I mean, mm-hmm. at the time, I mean, it was one of those things where you would just get sort of word of mouth that he would show up. Or he was in the studio and, you know, he was likely to show up and no telling, you know, what it is that would happen, right? He would come out, play guitar for a while, he'd sing, he would introduce, you know, some up-and-coming acts that he's working with. And then if he didn't show up, then there'd just be music playing and it turned into this rave that went on until sun came up, right?
That's amazing.
And so that pretty fun and it kept me alive as far as, you know, my love for music. Then I moved from Minnesota to Indianapolis and then, you know, between that time moved to the Chicago area. And once I got here to Chicago, I was almost introduced to a whole different aspect of music. I mean, mm-hmm. it, it, it is a it's something that if I had had a transition place between Louisville and California, this would be my transition place. I mean, their love for music and the way that they appreciate music is much different. You have, a lot of homegrown, blues, classic rock bands. They play a lot of close venues and small, just places that make listening and being a part of that experience real intimate. There was places like that in California, but a lot of them were still places where you just showed, you were just there to be seen. I mean, it wasn't necessarily a place where you always were there to just enjoy the music. And I appreciate Chicago, for having things like that, where you still can walk in, sit down, enjoy the music, and it's not a place where, you're just kind of constantly networking, shaking hands, and trying to look around and see who's here, see who's not there, right? I literally was working downtown, and I had a nice job, at United Airlines, sitting at my desk, and I'd been there 10 years, and I decided that I can't do 11 years. I can't do 11 years of doing this. I need to find something that I enjoy, that made me happy. I mean, I've traveled, I've been to Europe a few times, been to South America, been to Canada, and I thought, maybe if I traveled, and that just made it worse because, here I am, I go to Amsterdam and I look at their, walk into a record store, and then here I am, I'm jealous, right, because their music scene is just lively, go to London, and then to Paris, and I'm just walking around, every place I go, I'm just jealous. So,
and it's funny because you could have feasibly avoided music places, but obviously you just completely were gravitated towards them wherever you went. It's like in your blood.
But why avoid them? Right.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And I found myself like every day, right, I would take the train home, finish up my day. I would turn on some music, and depending upon, how I was feeling, that would be what I turned on, right? I would turn on Miles Davis. I would play, some Chicago. I would play some Stevie Nicks. I would play some Two Live Crew. I would play some Ice Cube. I would play a little bit of everything, right? There'd be Maroon 5 that would come on. So, I mean, I was just all across the board, right? Amy Winehouse. So however I felt was I would just turn that on, and there was probably some glasses of wine involved in that, or some a beverage that I wanted to drink. And once I did that, then that would kind of make whatever was going on in my day seem insignificant. I just listened to my music and enjoyed, whatever it is I was doing for the evening. And then, once you kind of add on, social media to that, right, I had an opportunity to connect with a lot of my friends that they're still, DJing and in a big way. So it made me kind of think, well, I need to get back to where, I'm comfortable. And I looked at it and I said, well, I mean, my days of kind of being in front of a mic are behind me for the most part. So I bought a record store. And
so wait, how did how did that happen though? Were you literally just like, I walked by this building, or was it just something that you were like, I'm going to buy a record store? Like, how did that all transpire?
Well, I thought my mind was that I just didn't want to sit at my desk job downtown. Right. I mean, I enjoyed downtown. It was fun. I mean, there's a lot of aspects about being downtown Chicago that are enjoyable. I, go out and they have Blues Fest, and I just walk around and on my lunch break or after work and just enjoy the blues. When they were setting up for Lollapalooza, you would get to be a part of, sort of that whole energy around Lollapalooza. You could walk down, to any number of clubs that would have some sort of live music. And you could do this, on your lunch break. There were house DJs that they had out, by the government center that would, spin records, during lunchtime. So these are things that you could just walk out and, spend an hour of just walking around the city and just enjoy, or after work, you know, just, you know, there'd be times where I'd take the late train home because I'd spend too much time downtown. So here I am, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to leave on the 6 o'clock train. And the next thing you know, I'm still messing around downtown, you know, listening to some music or whatever. And I'm, okay, I'll get on the 7 o'clock train. And the next thing you know, it's the 11 p.m. train. That's the last train home. I have to get on that train because I didn't, you know, just hung out downtown and enjoyed, you know, all of that ambiance that they have, whether it be food, music, the vibrant nature of being down there. You know, you could do that literally just after work. So I enjoyed that. But that didn't necessarily make it helpful, you know, because that just was kind of a teaser for me.
Right. And it sounds like the kid outside the candy store window, you know, you're just on the outside looking in.
Absolutely. And so I'd known this record store. I was here for a while, visited the owner a couple of times. And first I thought, well, maybe I'll just buy a business and I'll figure out what business I wanted to buy, just to be an entrepreneur, just to do something on my own, not have to work for anybody, just be, you know, a businessman for myself. And then I thought, well, you know, I don't know if I have a passion for like making sandwiches or pizza or anything like that. Uh-huh. And I'd come to this record store before and saw it in one of my business listings that it was up for sale. And I come by, talked to the owner a couple of times, asked him if he was serious about selling the business. And this particular location had been here for 18 years. He really had a niche for specializing in like obscure psychedelic and progressive rock. And I thought that would be real interesting because that was an aspect of music that I really enjoyed but didn't necessarily know a great deal about from a personal perspective, because I just didn't, you know, I literally wasn't born during the time that, you know, Grateful Dead was around, or when you knew Genesis as being a progressive rock band. Or, you know, you talk about, you know, the work that Jimi Hendrix did, you know, so that was something that I really wanted to learn more about. Plus, you know, I said, well, I could add, you know, my influence, you know, and bring some things in here that some of the younger people in the neighborhood had never seen in here. So, you know, the first time I brought some stuff in by Jay Dilla, right, it was like, oh, you sell Dilla here? And I was like, well, now I do, right? I just, yeah. You know, you didn't have it here previously because, you know, the previous owner, he didn't necessarily know a lot about the influence that Dilla had, you know, on a lot of music, especially in this area. So he just never carried it. So now, you know, you could go through and look through the collection that I have, pick up something from Porcupine Tree, but then pick up something, you know, from Common, right? So or if you want, you know, Metallica, you could grab that. Or if you want something by Bo Diddley, I have that, right? So Michael Jackson to Sarah Vaughan, right? So I try to make it, you know, a real well-rounded place where you could come and enjoy music, talk about music.
It is kind of a trip, too, because, you know, it's almost like it fell into your lap. Like the fact that you got the previous owner's inventory, it wasn't like you had to buy an empty building and, you know, completely build it up from scratch and build a following up from scratch. It's like you literally were able to step into somebody else's shoes kind of thing. So you get to have your influence, but you've already got this kind of established brick and mortar brand. You know, so it's kind of wild when you think about it, right? Right. Like there you are 10 years working at a job and you're like, the hell am I doing? And then literally the universe or God or whoever is like, here's a record store that has everything already. It's like walking into a fully furnished house. Here you go. Right. And you get to add whatever you want, but it's all here. It's already got a following. It's been here, you know, over a decade. That's pretty fucking crazy.
It is really wild. I mean, I come in there every day and I, you know, unlock the doors. And the thing that makes it, you know, even more interesting is that the previous owner, you know, he did a lot, you know, with just traditional type of connections and networking. So people would literally write letters and, you know, request to have, you know, records or CDs sent to them. And he didn't do a lot as far as social media, as far as e-commerce work. And the work that I did previous to buying the store was marketing and e-commerce. So that was Perfect. That was my strength.
It's another, like, there it is. Yeah.
Right, absolutely. It's wild. I mean, now it gives me the opportunity where when I work downtown, I could, you know, get into certain places. But I would always speak from, you know, kind of a corporate perspective, right? You know, I work for this corporation, and here I am, you know, just around, you know, a bunch of just skateboard kids and stuff, right? And I'm mm-hmm. like, well, this is something that I'm really interested in, and I would love to speak your language, but I don't know what to offer you outside of, you know, being here and enjoying this moment, right? So now, I mean, when I go and I go to different places, and I hear a band play, I go in and walk and see, you know, see a DJ playing somewhere. We can enjoy that moment, but then I can also give them a business card and say, hey, you know, if you have something that you want me to put in my store, or if you know, have, you know, some other events that, you know, would be interesting for me to attend, or if you want to come out to my store, you know, and you know, do a meet and greet there or play or something like that. I have a much broader way of communicating and building my network than to just say, oh, okay, yeah, this party was fun, and now, you know, tomorrow morning I'm going to go sit back at my desk. That has right. nothing to do with what it is that I was doing, you know, at that particular event, right? So
right, exactly. Yeah, you're a player. You're back in part of the industry. You're no longer an audience member.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that comes as challenges because now, you know, I'm in an environment that I am not that familiar with mm-hmm. because I didn't grow up in the Chicago music scene. Right? I grew up in the you know, L.A., California, Orange County, you know, Northern California music scene. So those that are here, I'm kind of meeting them for the first time. It is fun because some of my friends have made trips out here, you know, for guest appearances, whether, you know, they're, you know, playing or are coming out, you know, for a particular event. So I have been able to sort of bridge some of those connections, which have been interesting because it's people that I literally haven't seen, you know, in probably, you know, 15 years. And I've seen them more, you know, in the last, you know, like 6 months than I have, you know, within, you know, 15-20 years. So
right. That's so cool. That's so great. We're kind of running short on time, so I got to wrap up, but I wanted to just get your take real quick on, you know, you've got a brick and mortar record store, which is technically like a dinosaur, right? So what's your right? But it's an endangered species. It's still a very valuable species, but it's an endangered species. So what's your take for the future? Like, what will kind of keep you going and keep the business going and that kind of thing?
Well, that is a great question. And I told the previous owner when I was taking over the store from him is that, you know, at the end of the day, I'm investing in music. I'm not necessarily investing in, you know, vinyl or CDs or equipment or, you know, I'm investing in music. So I have to look at it, you know, first and foremost from a business perspective, and see how I could keep, you know, my business model as flexible and as nimble as possible, right? It's almost kind of, you know, if you're a musician today, and you know, you're focused on doing one particular thing, it's going to be hard for you to get work, and it's going to be this, you know, it's the same for, you know, for running the store. You know, I can't wait for people to walk in the door in order for me to, you know, make a living, right? I have to saturate, you know, the market from an e-commerce perspective, selling on Amazon, selling on eBay, selling on Discogs. I have to get out there, you know, and in some cases, you know, spin some records at places. I've been down to a local wine shop here that's down the street and set turntables up there. Just let people know that you know, this platform of listening to music and enjoying music is not necessarily going to go away because you have, you know, a digital way of listening to things. One of my most enjoyable conversations to have with people is when they ask me why has vinyl made such a big resurgence? And, you know, the way that I explain it to them is that you have now the ability to listen to music in so many different formats that, you know, that you never had before. And the way that we operate and the way that we work is at this, at such a fast pace, and it's just increasing, right? So you're texting, you're emailing, you know, you're trying to, you know, keep up with Snapchat. You're trying to keep up, you know, with Facebook. You're trying to keep up, you know, with Instagram. You're trying to keep up with Twitter and Pinterest, right? So you're trying to do all of these things. And once you, if you put on a vinyl record, it is something that you're doing intentionally, right? Because at some point in time, you, the music is going to stop on side A, and you're going to have to flip it over to side B. So you're going to intentionally put that on and listen to it. So it's going to slow you down just a little bit, you know. And that, to me, in the, in this environment, that's needed. I mean, I have high school kids that come in, and they buy records because it's their way of dating. And, you know, they just haven't developed the social skills to talk to a girl, right? Because they're too busy texting or too busy, you know, just, can I get your Snapchat, right? They don't know their last name. They don't know their phone number. They don't know where they live. They just know that, okay, I need to connect with this person, and this is how I do it. So when it comes to sitting down and having a conversation with a woman or a man or, you know, whoever it is that you're trying to, you know, date, it's hard, right? Because you don't sit there and have, you know, eye-to-eye conversation with somebody. So they'll come in, buy a record, and now they can read the liner notes, talk about the cover art, talk about, you know, the artists that play, you know, in this particular band and whoever was on, you know, on particular tracks. And it is bringing, you know, something that, you know, we used to do back around again, but it's needed, it's necessary. So as long as you have that need, which I don't think that need will ever go away, it's just up to me from a business perspective to try to anticipate that need and stay on top of that need and try to figure out how I continuously stay in that niche.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. And that's like, you have a very worthy calling. So I have no doubt that you're going to just continue to be successful and be the Amoeba Records of Chicago. So I think that's
fantastic. I look forward to it.
Absolutely. Tell people what your website, and they can actually buy online, yeah?
Absolutely. You can buy online. I keep about 90% of my inventory, both new and used, online. It's at musicmastersworldwide.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well, so Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. Tried to do pretty good as far as being out there, as far as being socially connected. And if anyone needs to get in touch with me, you know, email address is pretty simple as well. It's Cordell@musicmastersworldwide.com. And I take all kinds of special requests. I even buy some records too. So, and I absolutely ship worldwide. I've shipped Singapore. I've shipped, you know, around the corner. So if it's something you're looking for, I definitely can get it and get it to you quickly. And
that's right. And Christmas is right around the corner. So get your shopping list ready.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you so much, Cordell. I so appreciate this. It was so nice talking to you.
Oh, yeah. This was fun. This was fun. I had a good time. And I hope that if nothing else, you know, I educated some people a little bit and provided some sort of entertainment.
Absolutely. So whether you're celebrating Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, or Festivus for the rest of us, get that shopping list out and give the gift of vinyl. So Music Masters Worldwide, it's MusicMastersWorldWide.com. Yes, I spelt it right. That is the website to check out, or you can email Cordell, as he said, Cordell@musicmastersworldwide.com, and they're also on the streaming, social media platforms, so you can follow him on Instagram or Twitter or like his Facebook page. Okay, so that's it. Episode 10. We're in the double digits now. Oh my goodness. This is so exciting. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing and liking and sharing and telling your friends. Hint, hint. If you want to check out my musical mutterings, I am at lariel-music.com. That's lariel-music.com. I've also recently launched a YouTube channel all about the 80s stuff going on with Stranger Things 2. And just some fun cover songs, and I'm going to continue to try to put out content there, so if you want to check that out. Okay, babies, here we go. So take good care, keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't give up.